Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. Really nice to see you all, and to see the Zendo, and to experience the ceremony there at the end of Zazen. So what I wanted to offer this evening is a theme in my own life, and a theme that I think comes up a lot in Buddhist teaching and in the Buddhist tradition. One of the things that I really appreciate about this practice, this Zen Buddhist practice, and Buddhist practice in general, and the core of the historical Buddhist teachings, is how practical it is, how it really speaks to the deep question of how we live our lives from day to day. This is really at the core of Buddhist philosophy or Buddhist teaching, or the historical Buddha's concerns, as far as I understand them. How we should live. And I think the details of that change, you know, over the course of several hundred or thousand years, the details of the kind of concerns that we have about our lives have changed since the historical Buddha's time, or maybe since Dogen's time in medieval Japan. But we still read those teachings, and I think it's because the content of a lot of it speaks to something universal. So one of the themes I wanted to address this evening is overwhelm, the way in which things can pile up in our lives in a way that's can be overwhelming. The other day I was meeting online with some fellow priests here from Canando, and somebody asked me the question, how are you? I guess we were just checking in with each other, and how are you? And I sort of stopped, and you know, sometimes somebody asks you that question and you just realize you haven't asked yourself that for a while. You know, how are you? And I was like, I'm busy. Like, I am so busy that I haven't asked myself that question in a really long time. You know, I'm busy. Like, I've got a lot on, right? You know, does anyone relate to that? Like, that feeling of having so much on, having stuff on your plate. And if we have that expression in England, I've got a lot on my plate. You know, I always think of a plate that's like overloaded with too much food that you can't eat. I've got too much on my plate. I think it's that phenomenon that's referred to in the Metta Sutta that we were just chanting, about being submerged by the things of the world. You know, this deep wish, let one not be submerged by the things of the world or take on the burden of riches. And by riches, I don't think it necessarily refers to, you know, fame or wealth, great wealth, you know, nice houses and cars. I think it's in general, you know, what we think the products of our labors will be, you know, some hope that these things that I'm doing now are going to make my life better, are going to make me a better person. So I'm gonna complain about this a little bit more, about how busy I am. I love etymology. I love to look up the history of words. I was looking up complain, and of course the first part of complain is the com bit, when you do something together. You know, let's do this together. And the plain bit comes from the Latin word plangere. If Latin people spoke with an Italian accent, they would say plangere. And it means to beat the breast or to lament. So the kind of original sense of complaining is to lament something, but together, you know, to lament something together. So I'm bringing my lament to you this evening, that I'm busy and I'm tired and I feel a little overwhelmed. And I can, you know, I can look into the reasons for this. One of the reflections I had when I was asked about this last week, you know, I said, well, my daughter now is 8 years old, and somehow I was expecting that as she got older, I would find myself less busy with the job of motherhood, which also for me, you know, involves the job of my role within the family, which is the caretaker, you know, the person who does the cooking and buys the food and takes care of the house and organizes all the things that we do. But somehow I'm finding it's getting more and more. And of course, you know, my daughter's growing and she's becoming more complex in her own activities and the things she likes to do. And so I find myself working very hard to accommodate all of that for her. You know, so she has a long school day, and then at the end of the school day, there are more activities because she loves to do them. She likes to go to gymnastics and she likes to do drama in the theater. And she goes to a wood workshop, makes little wooden toys, and she does break dancing. My goodness, you know, it goes on and on. And she can't drive herself there yet. So. And then I'm a diehard yes person anyway, you know, for the most part. That's something I'll probably not something I should share, but in general, I'm not well acquainted with the word no when I'm asked to do something. You know, I like to please and take on projects or take on favors. And I'm interested in a lot of things too. So I have lots of projects on the go, and work projects and other things, and Dharma practice. So, you know, I'm not, I think, oh gosh, you know, I look at people who have, you know, full-time 9-to-5 professional jobs and, you know, 4 or 5 kids at home and, you know, perhaps elderly parents that they're also taking care of. And I think, gosh, you know, I'm not, compared to that, actually, my life's quite simple. And yet that feeling of overwhelm still comes to me, you know. So what's that about? Like, and the effect is that it's stressful. And that stress can manifest in a sense of sort of a deeper sense of emptiness, that things are just happening, you know, or time is passing by and events are passing by, and I'm just kind of on autopilot, like facilitating them. And that's sad to me, you know, that there should be periods like that in my one wild and precious life. But I see the tendencies in myself, you know, I see the ways in which I add things, you know, I keep adding things into the mix. I'll give you an example of something recently. With all the things that I do, and then my daughter was doing her breakdancing last year. And at the end of the year, they had a show, like an end of year show. And it's a dance school that she goes to. So there's children and adults at this dance school. And at the end of the year, they have this big show where all the different types of dancing. So there's salsa and hip hop and breakdance and ladies dancing in high heels and all sorts, you know, it was wonderful. It was very entertaining. And I'm watching the whole thing. And then one of the dances that came on was something called Afro dancing. And I was just blown away by Afro dancing. And there was these women and they were dancing. They had so much energy and it was just beautiful to watch them. And I was hypnotized. And I was just, and I said to my husband who was sitting next to me, I said, I want to do that. And he was like, yes, you should, you know, it's wonderful. And in the grand scheme of things, you know, I thought, well, this will be a great, a great way to sort of balance my life. And a lot of the things I do are very sedentary. You know, I don't move like that, you know, usually in my life. And wouldn't it be wonderful to learn that? So that was sort of my desire after the summer. I came back and I said, I'm going to be Afro dancing this year. And then I was looking at the schools and the schedule and, you know, trying to figure out where I could fit that in. And I was, you know, getting to this kind of ridiculous exchange with my husband where, you know, in order for me to go to Afro dancing, we would need to do X, Y, and Z that would involve kind of just juggling 10 other things and standing on our heads. And I said, no, you know, this is ridiculous. Like, I can see how I do this. You know, there's something else that I get caught by. It's a wonderful idea, but it's not the moment. You know, I'm confident that one day I'll get there, hopefully before I'm too old, but not right now. Not right now. So I was complaining about all of this the other day. And then, you know, as you do, I came back around to myself and I thought, well, you know, so I've identified a problem now, you know, and now I need to do something about this. You know, I need to do something about how busy I am. And then that process starts, you know, I'm figuring out what it is I need to do to counter all this doing that I'm doing, right? So I'm like, oh, no, you know, so I dropped that idea as well. You know, not more doing. That didn't seem right. What I think it's important to be aware of is the ways in which we can get very judgmental about this theme, you know, judgmental and kind of harsh with ourselves and with others about lots of things, but in this particular case, you know, busyness. I just moved away from the Bay Area a year ago. But the Bay Area is a busy place. You know, people are busy. You know, even within our Dharma world, people are busy with the Dharma, you know, teachers, other people that, you know, I work with. Within this sort of larger community of ours, it's easy to feel a little lonely within all of that. There's a sense that I often had a sense like, oh, you know, maybe, you know, people aren't available. Like they're busy. They've got other things to do. And a lot of it is the way that our culture holds this. You know, I think there's always an encouragement towards diversifying our lives, you know, within culture and the narratives of culture. That, you know, the more things we do, the more interesting we are. You know, the more we work, the more we'll have money to buy this and that, you know, these things that we need, supposedly. And then within culture, there's a kind of counterculture that's also grown up that says, and you need to simplify your life. You know, you need to be more Zen about this. You know, Marie Kondo sold more books, you know, the year that her book came out than I don't know who. You know, she's like, and all that stuff you've accumulated, now get rid of it. And I tried that and it was quite effective. You know, I did get rid of a lot of stuff. I've talked about this before. But it gets kind of crazy, you know, there's a lot of conflicting messages. And I think that ultimately, you know, living in this way, it's not sustainable for health. It's not sustainable for health. And I think this is a universal theme. I really do. I mean, I talk about the ways in which our particular culture now perpetrates it. But I feel, at least in myself, you know, a lot of this kind of behavior, it goes much deeper than just the phenomena of modern culture. I think it's very easy to say, oh, you know, modern life is rubbish, isn't it? Modern life, blame it for all of this. But there's a certain sense in which we distract ourselves, you know, in which I distract myself, and whether it's, you know, and it can apply to whatever's directly in front of me. You know, I don't think it's necessarily, you know, something that is just pertinent to, you know, the West in 2023. I think it's why the historical Buddha, you know, taught the things that he did with so much urgency. I think there have been equivalents in every time and every place. It's a symptom of suffering, you know. You could sort of this kind of hyper distracted unhappiness. It's suffering playing itself out. And it's inherent. We're such complex beings, and then when we get together and we make a culture, it's infinitely more complex. It's not simple. It's not necessarily simple or obviously simple, you know, how we can exist in this in a way that is sustainable and healthy. Which is why if you take up a practice, or I think, you know, it's one of the reasons, you know, for me, why practice is so important, because it addresses that. And not only does it address that, but it presents some very practical ways of meeting that, and of being able to change that from the internal root, you know. So I could say I'm going to simplify my life by, you know, throwing away 2/3 of the things I own. But guaranteed, you know, 5 years from now, there'll be something else in its place, you know. So I think a lot about the ways in which practice can really make that profound change. So I think one way in which practice has helped me, or that practice can be relevant to this question, is that within this practice, you know, deep down, we come to a place where there's no judgment, which is to say there's no way of doing something right. You know, there's no right way. There's skillful ways. You know, we always have options, and there's ways in which we can engage our lives, engage the present moment, in our practice. There's a call to intimacy. There's a call to quietening down the noisy flow, and just becoming intimate with what's there. Not rejecting what's there. Not becoming anxious about it or cross with it, resenting it. Not trying to just stuff it all into black bin bags and throw it in the trash. But the first step, I think, is to enter into it and to inhabit it. What is it to be living this busy, overwhelming, exhausting life? What is that? How does that feel? How can I practice from inside of this? From inside the eye of the storm. You know, I love that image, the eye of the storm, and it's all busy and crazy and energetic on the outside. And then there's this center that's still. How does that manifest? One of my favorite lines from all Zen teachings ever is, and actually one of my favorite texts that I brought up before, and I do keep mentioning it, but it's Master Keizan's Zazen Yojinki. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a longish text that talks about Zazen, a bit like the Fukan Zazengi. It's a series of instructions, both sort of practical and philosophical around Zazen, in which he talks about, you should sit in a dry space and it shouldn't be too bright or too dark or too hot or too cold. And this is how you cross your legs. And, you know, this is how you hold your body. This is the posture. And there's a lot, you know, it goes on and on. And he brings some Zen teachings and Buddhist teachings into the text as well. And then right at the end of the text, just before, like in the penultimate paragraph, there's this line where he addresses the end of Zazen. And he says, arising from stillness, carry out activities without hesitation. Arising from stillness, carry out activities without hesitation. This moment is the koan. This moment is the koan. So our practice is a container. You know, we have these forms. Like, I was just reflecting on this while I was watching the ceremony at Canando. You know, there's a bell rings or a bell rings twice, and then we do something, you know. And there's a way to come into a room. There's a way to leave a room. There's a way to engage. There's a direction in which to walk. If you go to a temple, and then these principles sort of, they expand to cover everything. You know, if you want to go that far, you know, there are some temples, and I think especially in Asia, where every moment from when you wake up to when you go to bed, like there can be helpful directions for all of that. You know, there's a way in which you use the bathroom mindfully, you know, or you, the ways in which you work mindfully, or you rest or eat. You know, there's a way to hold the bowls and chopsticks and the eating utensils, and it's all there. And it's there, and it's presented and offered, you know, not in the spirit of regimentation, not in the spirit of there needing to be rules, you know, like a strict school or something. Those rules are there so that the practitioners can relax, you know, so that just for a short period of time, we can be relieved from the necessity of having to make choices. So we can engage in action and just concentrate and pour yourself into the action without having to think, well, am I doing the right, you know, well, actually, very often I think in the Zen, you know, in Zen practice, we might be thinking, am I doing the right thing? Am I standing in the right place? You know, there's a lot to learn. But that aside, you know, once you have ascertained that, it kind of becomes a dance. It's lovely. That's what I was thinking when I was watching the ceremony or what I could see from it. You know, it's a dance. It's beautiful. And when you're dancing, you go through the steps and you know, you have no concern about, you know, what this is going to produce. You enjoy the moment. You enjoy the movement and the dancing. And I was thinking about, I was like, temples are busy. You know, and anyone who's had some time to stay at a practice place or, you know, temples, you know, they're busy in that somebody coming in for the first time would just see a lot of, there's activity. There's not, you know, you don't see monks sitting around doing the Times crossword. Everybody's kind of, you know, from the moment you wake up, there's, you know, there's sitting, there's zazen, there's practice, and there's a lot of work in temples. You know, people occupied with cleaning and cooking, you know, then there's eating, and there might be a rest period at some point during the day, but it's kind of worked in and it's never too long. But the quality of that busyness is completely different, because it's done in the spirit of practice, and it's done in a completely wholehearted and simple way. I was thinking about joining in the work practice at Canando and the ways in which that has affected my life, you know, like cleaning the Zendo. And we have a special way that we clean the Zendo that Les has always encouraged, that, you know, we get down and we clean the floor with our hands, you know, get close to the work. Like that was a teaching that I received from Les, get close to the work. And I would come away from work periods feeling so, like, I feel, and you know, speak for everybody, I feel satisfied, you know, I feel very whole after this work. And I think, oh, if I want to take that home with me. I want to be able to clean my house in the same way that I clean the Zendo. Because I get home and then I'm like, grumble, I have to, you know, clean the toilet. And it's different. But I, you know, if I can do it in the spirit of practice, and I can do it in the same way that we do it at Canando, it just becomes a different thing. So I practice with that. I can see the time. I won't go on too much longer. So I come back to that idea of the koan. You know, of the moment after zazen, because, you know, it's a practical moment. It's a moment that occurs every day when zazen finishes and the bell rings. And then the power of that moment when you arise out of stillness, how do you continue? How do you carry that? It's the way in which we learn in this practice, it's experiential. You know, we experience these things within the container of practice. And we teach our minds and we teach our bodies. And then that can continue. But the goal, well, there is no goal, that there's no idea that we do this practice in order to have empty lives. You know, it's not that we're doing this so that eventually our days will be spent in a rocking chair on a porch, you know, sort of staring out into space. You know, the process of living, just keeping yourself alive is busy. in itself, there's a lot to do, you know, on the sort of hierarchy of needs. Once you've got a roof over your head and you've cooked for yourself and you nourish yourself and you sort of provide the things that you need to live, it's enough. Like, there's a lot of activity, you know, just in that. And I think the essential teaching of what we practice is that it's not what we do, it's how we do it, how we engage it. When he says carry out your activities without hesitation, it just means doing what needs to be done, doing what's important, you know, the most important thing in this moment, just in the way that we practice at Canando. When we hesitate, there's doubt, you know, there's questioning, there's thinking, there's conceptualizing. A koan is kind of a question, but it's not a question that has an answer. It's a living thing, you know, it's not something you can just answer and put away. It's something that continues. And for me, this koan continues my whole life. It's asking for a response that comes from the heart, you know, that comes from the truth of being. So I'll finish. I have a little quote here from a Chinese master called Pei Chen from the 13th century. I found this quote and I thought it was lovely and relevant. Let your actions be like clouds going by. The clouds going by are mindless. Let your stillness be as the valley spirit. The valley spirit is undying. When action accompanies stillness, and stillness combines with action, then the duality of action and stillness no longer arises. Okay. Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.